This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
I'm at NAM 2014 in Portsmouth, and I have with me Gerhard Schwimm from ESA.
Hi.
So you've just given a really fascinating talk about the Rosetta mission and the Rosetta spacecraft. First of all, could you just give us a quick overview of what that mission is and what it's trying to do?
Rosetta is a mission to rendezvous with a comet. That means we will soon get in orbit around the comet, and we want to study the comet in full detail, because this will be the first mission that really stays with the comet for a long time. It's not a fast flyby. It really stays there. It's a rendezvous. We can study great detail the surface of the comet. We can study the composition of the comet, the environment of the comet when the activity develops, when it's far away from the sun through perihelion and then to the outer or far distance from the sun. And this will be really fascinating after the flybys we had, the first of time to really stay with the comet and see how everything works.
Wow, that's really interesting. And what makes it even more special is that, so there's two parts to it, basically. There's the spacecraft, the Rosetta spacecraft, and you're also going to try and land a module onto the comet itself. So could you tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah, that's correct. That was when we designed the mission. From the agency, we wanted to have a rendezvous mission with an orbiter, but we always had the idea that you could also have a lander, and we got a consortium from DLR and CNES and RC in the end, with a lot of other participants from all over Europe, that provided the lander to ESA. So the lander is not under the management of ESA, but it was provided like an instrument to ESA. And it is really a challenging project to have a small lander that's carried to a comet and that should land on a comet surface. And as I explained in the talk, what is really so fascinating, or perhaps also where you really have to be very concerned, we don't know the comet yet. You know, we have only from this comet, we have ground-based observations. Sure. And it's the first time that somebody gets close to Churyumov-Gerasimenko, our target. Okay. But so far, the resolution we get, it's basically a pixel. And on this surface, you want to put down a lander of a size of, it's a 1 cubic meter object, so to say, but with the legs, it's 2 meters. So this will be the challenge. As soon as we get close to the comet, which will happen in a couple of weeks, so end of July, we get close that we can really see how does the surface look like, what are the properties of the comet. And then within a couple of weeks, we have to decide where to land on the nucleus and implement everything with flight dynamics. So this will be really a big challenge, and it's fascinating, but you know, science you only get when you really try your best, and that you really try something that nobody has done before.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a big exercise in adaptability, I guess, because you don't really know what it looks like. Talking a bit about the history of the Rosetta mission, so, well, first of all, when was it launched, and how long has it taken you to get to where the comet is, and also where is the comet actually situated?
Yeah, no, it was launched on the 2nd of March 2004, more than 10 years ago, and it takes such a long time to get a comet. If you want to go in a rendezvous, you have to synchronize your orbit with the orbit of the comet. Now, the comet is on a fairly elliptic orbit. It's a Jupiter family comet. That means the comet has basically its aphelion, the point farthest away from the sun, close to Jupiter's orbit, and then it comes, this comet now, to 1.2 AU for its perihelion. But that means you need a lot of energy to get there. And we don't have a launcher that can do it directly. You can't just launch it. So if you do it the way we do it with a ballistic mission, you have to go far out. And the only way to do it, to compensate for the fuel you don't have or for the power you don't have with your launcher, is to do gravity assists. That means you use the Earth to gain the orbital energy. Sure. And that we had to do now. Churyumov-Gerasimenko was also very challenging in this one, so we had actually 3 flybys at the Earth, and we had 1 flyby at Mars to really target the spacecraft really optimally at Earth. And that adds to your flight time, so because 1 Earth flyby is basically, you can say, if you don't go far out, it's 1 year till you get back, but as you want to go far away, so we were basically going through the asteroid belt, and therefore these orbits also take a little bit longer, and that adds to your flight time. but it saves you a lot of money, a lot of fuel, but also a lot of money, because if you would have launched this extra fuel that was needed, it would have been at least six or eight tons more. Wow. So it's a lot. Yeah. So the spacecraft was just over 3 tons when we launched it, and we don't have a launcher for get six tons to something. Yeah.
So what's the schedule now? So the Rosetta is getting close to the comet. Once you get there, what happens, and when does the lander come into play?
Yeah. What happens right now, we are just at the end of a sequence of what we call deep space maneuvers that really get the spacecraft close to the comet. Right now we are 150,000 kilometers away, and we have a sequence of smaller maneuvers. So by the end of July, one can say we're getting 3,000 kilometers away, something like very close, and then we're getting gradually closer, and also the relative velocity between the comet and the spacecraft gets much smaller. Mm-hmm. And so early July, we can already dream of to get the first higher resolution images, so that the comet is not only one pixel, mm-hmm. but we get some kind of resolution. Sure. And then early August, we should get to about a resolution of 10 meters, put it like this. So this sequence will go on, so we get closer and closer to the nucleus. And then early August, the 7th of August, we will go in an orbit. I say that in quotation marks because it's not really orbit, but it's some kind of pseudo-orbit. We fly in front of the comet, but we have the same relative velocity. And so the motion of the spacecraft in front of the comet is very, very slow. Uh-huh. So because, you know, a lot of people have... If you have an Earth-orbiting spacecraft, it's 90 minutes to get around.
Yeah.
And for the comets, that's a couple of days. It's very, very slow, so it's like a pedestrian, walking. And this is basically what we are doing. That's and great. That gives us a lot of time to map the comet. That means with the cameras, we can map the comet. But also we have time for the mass spectrometers. They have a lot of time to integrate the measurements, and that should give us a lot of great results.
Brilliant. And what is the lander going to do? I think you mentioned it has a drill, so it's going to take some samples of the surface itself.
Yeah. Okay. This what we do most of the stuff is to learn about the comet, but it's also to characterize the comet, that we know it in great detail, and everything we know, that we can also prepare the landing, because what we want to do is to deploy the lander mid of November. And we have to do it so soon, even if we have a very short time to learn everything about the nucleus, because the activity starts to increase. And you want to deploy the lander at a time when the activity is still fairly moderate or low, because then you don't have disturbances on the spacecraft that disturbs a little bit the orbit. And we have to be very precise, and also when the lander falls down. So the lander will be deployed 11th of November. That's the nominal date. It will go down onto the surface, more or less passively, sit there, and then starts measurements. So we have cameras, a number of cameras that will give us a panoramic view, and then look where the best site is. We can rotate the lander body, and then go to the best site where we can drill into the nuclear surface and take samples from the subsurface, so up to 20 centimeters, 30 centimeters below. These samples are taken out and then fed into some rotating oven. So we have an oven, and we can, so to say, heat up the samples. And then when you heat up, then with a mass spectrometer, you just measure what is coming out at a certain temperature. So this is a normal technology and the technique, but you do it on a comet nucleus. So there is there's a gas chromatographic analyzer behind it and a mass spectrometer. And these two together will give us then, and together with the temperature information, the information also on the composition of the material. And this will be very challenging. And one of the instruments is coming from the Open University, the Ptolemy. They will look at the isotopic composition of the light elements. And this is, it's a fascinating instrument, and there's a lot of technology into it. And let's see if they give us some measurements, that will be really brilliant.
That would be absolutely amazing. I mean, landing something on a comet, I mean, people probably find that absolutely incredible. Just very quickly to wrap up, because I think another session is starting, but what's going to happen sort of after the comet passes its perihelion, and then And eventually, I guess, the Rosetta itself will run out of fuel or whatever. So what are the plans for the whole thing after that?
Okay, we will stay after the lander is deployed for more than a year with the comet, do all the measurements, go through perihelion, and then with the orbit out again, away from the sun. The nominal mission will end of 2015. But we already know that we have, if everything now goes all right, we have additional fuel on board, so we could stay with the comet nucleus again to a distance from the sun at 4 AU when we had to go in hibernation again because we have not enough power with our huge solar arrays. So there are a few options what we can do. One option is that we just let the spacecraft drift and do measurement till it dies, and then it will more or less stay at the orbit of the comet. The other option is what our plasma physics colleague want to do, that we do really excursions away from the nucleus, which costs some fuel because you want to do it fast and not just drift slowly away. And the third one, which I would see as the best, is at the end of the mission, just put the orbiter onto the surface and have it as a monument flying around with the comet, because it will stay close to the comet orbit for more or less forever. Uh-huh. Yeah, so it will not. It might drift slowly away, but I think that would be a wonderful end of the mission if the fuel, most of the fuel, is used up. Land it softly onto the nucleus and then let them go together.
A beautiful, fitting end to a really amazing project. Thank you very much for talking to us today, Gerhard.
Thank you, and all the best.